The Linux Link Tech Show. The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. An hour of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up. Link it up and take it away. Take it away.
Hell yes, Cupcakes. This is the Linux Link Tech Show, episode number 121, I believe, right? 121? 121? Anyone?
Is it?
Anyone? Anyone?
Something like that?
Anyone? I'm pretty sure it is, if I'm not having hallucinations again.
I've lost count, actually.
We've been doing this for a long time. Yeah, it's 121.
Yeah, I don't pay attention to the count anymore.
121.
It's just many
it's
of them.
A lot, yes.
It's just a lot.
This is number a lot. A lot plus one. The a lot that we had last week plus one more. Just like next week, it's going to be the a lot number that we had this week plus one.
Plus one more, yes.
Big news tonight, and some cool guests too, but I'm not going to tell you about them really until, you know, we get them on because you never know, right? Apparently we're having trouble getting Pat on today, through the asterisk box. Don't know whether he's trying to get on through the phone or through the IAX, connection, or if he's dealing with a puking child or what have you, but the good news is that the sound quality should be good because I'm in the studio.
Sound quality was good last week.
Yeah, but it's never as good as it is when I'm here.
Because we've got a big dick in here this week now.
That's right. You know. That's why the ladies love the Linkster.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, that's you. That's Dan. So must be its stuff is working. It just maybe Pat's busy or something.
Is that, better?
Sounds good to me.
Say something.
Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
I can hear you. You are very faint.
I'm very faint.
Can I hear me?
Yeah, you're very faint.
I'm very faint.
Alan's fine.
Alan's fine.
Up a little bit.
I don't know, man. I have no problem connecting.
The monitor has to go up.
Put me up to the monitor a little bit. All right.
Yeah, because that pump, the monitor line is what feeds the extra Xbox.
Gotcha.
Oh, you know what? Let me call that again.
Gotcha. Oh, here we go.
Hello.
Testing the whole time. Anyway, so what kind of nifty stuff has gone on this week, Alan?
Not a whole lot. I got a new mic, as most people have heard already, as everyone can now hear the fan noise super loud now on it. But I've got a condenser mic tonight, so which we may all be getting if I like this way this sounds.
It's beautiful, man. Tonight. I'm telling you. The funny thing about that is, like, the first thing I asked when I walked in, because it's a professional-looking mic, you know what I mean? It's a professional mic, but more professional-looking than the $5 Radio Shack mics that we all have. So I said, is it an omnidirectional, you know, microphone? This is what it looks like. And he says, no, it's a uni.
It's facing the right way, according to the little label or something like that.
Anyway, he says facing the right way. It's a unidirectional mic, and the server noise that you're hearing, the fans from the server noise, is like, God, it's got to be 4.5 feet, right? Behind.
Yeah, I've got this thing turned way down
behind the microphone, and he's got it turned way down. Sounds like it's inside the case, man. It's incredible. Huh.
Well, the little test recording that I did on the that I put on my blog.
Right, yeah, that sounded great.
I actually had that. I was holding it in my hand, down by my lap.
Really? You were holding it like 3.5 feet away from your head there?
Yeah, yeah.
And that sounded fantastic, you know.
Well, I still didn't show you. I bought a little toy to go along with it, which I didn't know whether I would need or not. Not. I've got a tube preamp for it.
Oh, no kidding.
On it, which would blow us away here.
Do.
On it, but that's it sounds awesome. Really nice. You can put like it has some like voicing on it, so you can get like a nice warm sound out of the microphone.
Awesome.
Because I knew that when I'm at home, I don't, you know, the board here has phantom power,
right?
Which I don't have at home, so I needed something to be at least to try it out. So it was a good excuse to go to the music store.
They're saying it sounds nasty. It's probably my mic they're talking about.
Nasty as in bad, or nasty as in just too loud? Because we're going to have to play around with the volume, you know, the
might be,
levels a little bit.
Might be just too loud or something.
And plus, I was also not talking into it just before. I was talking at you again.
Right. But no, it's a really cool mic. I want one. But we have to, you know, we have to come up with some kind of soundproof, you know, recording room or something. We're gonna have to like run wires down into Dan's basement.
Yeah.
We all go down there in a corner and talk back and forth or something. But man, I'm telling you what, that's something else. I got a present today too. I ordered from a guy on, any of you guys ever heard of the LEM swap list? It's L-E-M, low-end Mac.
The low-end Mac, yeah, I've heard
low-end
about
Mac
that.
Swap list. I'm on the low-end Mac swap list. I don't know if anybody's able to get on it anymore, or they stopped, every now and then they like stop subscriptions so new people can't subscribe. Anyway, I was on this and I saw this guy selling iMacs. Right? For a really reasonable price. Like, was it $45 or $49?
The lime
like
ones? The colored ones?
No. This is a, long story short is I bought it and I got it today. anyway, what the hell is it? Indigo. Okay?
Ooh.
400 megahertz Indigo iMac with 192 mega RAM, 6 gig hard drive.
Yeah, it's probably got that's the one with the DVD drive as well, right?
No DVD. It's on the sticker on the front, it didn't say DVD. I didn't really look, but it's a slot load. I think it's just a CD-ROM drive.
Okay.
Slot load CD-ROM. And so I got it today, right? And of course, yeah, I wonder what the first thing that I did with it could have been, right?
Slackintosh.
Yes. See? No. Alan knows me too well. Alan had given me, like a month or two back, had given me a set of CDs to install Slackintosh 10.2. Now, this is not the old Slackintosh, the one that's at like slackintosh.exploits.ch or something like that. This is a different one. This is the new one. You have to, let me pull up Google real quick. I can get you an address.
I finally got that anyway. Finished on, well, it's almost finished on mine. I have to get the sound working still.
For Slackintosh?
Yeah. For some reason, it didn't recognize the sound.
On what, your iMac?
On the iMac, yeah.
I bet you a buck your sound's on there, you just got to turn it up. I'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
let me find the
Well, because when I set mine up, I was having problems getting the monitor, you know, to getting X to run on it.
Yeah, there's another one.
Which I ended up using Ubuntu. I booted into Ubuntu and grabbed the Xorg config file.
Uh-huh.
And used that. And it came up really nice. It looks really nice now. And it actually runs pretty decently. Because I have the Lime one, which is only like a 333, I think it is.
Right.
And it actually runs. I mean, you can use it very well.
Okay, the URL for Slackintosh 10.2 is http://workaround.ch. And that'll get you right in there. But anyway, just like Alan was saying... I booted it up into what I have pre-installed on OS 9.2, right?
Yeah.
And I checked out OS 9.2, and evidently this was like some kind of ultra stripped-down sort of thing that they just left on there to prove that it was working or something, because it didn't even have like the CD player.
Apple. Okay, yeah.
There was nothing in it, man. You could get in, you could shut the thing down, you could do the about this computer thing on Mac OS 9.2, and that was it. There was nothing else in there. So, the first thing I thought of, actually, and I'm ashamed to
look
say,
look at those web shots up there.
Beautiful. First thing I thought of, and I'm ashamed to say, it was I was going to install the Ubuntu CD on there.
Okay, I had Ubuntu on there too,
and
that
actually
worked pretty well. Also,
what kind of RAM do you have in your machine?
I've got the 192 as well.
Do you?
Because that's the easy portion. That's the only part you can get to easily.
Okay.
If you want to get to the rest of the RAM, you've got to like pull the whole thing apart and like pry off a little board to get underneath. The RAM is split into like the top half and the bottom half.
Yeah, but 192. That's a 64 and a 128.
Yeah.
So I see. We had that computer show that's coming out this weekend. So I'm thinking about, you know, I want to find out.
Oh,
Dan is
it?
Dan is the guy with this stuff. He knows all about them. So I want to find out how much RAM I can stick in there.
Into what?
In iMac.
What kind of iMac?
It's a 400. See, he's not even paying.
Dude, I was fixing the webcam.
He was scratching himself. I heard his leg going. It's an Indigo, 400 megahertz Indigo iMac. It's got 192 megs in it now, which suggests to me, of course, that it's a 128 and a 64. And I want to know what I can put in there, and how to get it in there, actually, too, because, you know, I didn't crack the case or anything like that.
It comes apart really easy. It's three screws underneath it.
Yeah, we got a computer show coming this weekend, and boy, would I love to upgrade that thing to
you
at least 512.
You can upgrade it to a maximum of 1 gigabyte.
Really? Whoa, I bet you run like a bat out of hell with a gig in it, huh?
You sure? No, not that. That's an older one.
Now, maximum may be higher when higher density DIMMs are produced, but they say right now 1 gig. I would say 1 gigabyte. I need to get my dad a monitor. He blew out his monitors. Maybe I'll go.
Really?
It could cost me.
But
so
now
much
putting
money.
This, like I said, I almost
I
shame
to
say
it. Pussy too.
I was going to put Ubuntu on it, but I did not have my Ubuntu install CD. I actually have that at work. The nice ones that Dan gave us, you know, has the PPC install. I left it at work, so. And I was working from home today, so I didn't have it. But I did have that Slackintosh CDs, and I figured, I'll look at them anyway just to see if it'll, like, boot up on it. And because I wasn't going to install that because I figured it was, like, Slackintosh 10 or 10.1.
Yeah, 10.2.
But I got the CDs out, and it was 10.2, and I said, holy crap, man, this is the stuff. So I stuffed it right in there and did the install, which, by the way, is very, very, very similar to a regular old Slackware install, with the exception of the
formatting,
the drive partitioning.
Yeah,
you have to do like Mac/FDisk, okay, which is different than the regular FDisk, which sucks, but it's not that different that it still doesn't suck too much, because it still sucks.
I looked out a little bit because I had put Ubuntu on there first, and that had partitioned for me.
Oh, you're good.
So I looked out there. I didn't
see mine was just a regular old native Mac install on there.
I've done those before and, on the old world ones.
Yep, and I hate doing the installs. I hate using FDisk, right? Because FDisk is just a crappy utility. It's a crappy interface. However, like, there's one little paragraph that displays on the screen when it first starts up the Slackintosh that says exactly what to do.
Yeah.
It says you press I to initialize the disk, then you press B to create a boot partition, and then you add the other partitions you want, swap partition and a Linux partition, Linux native. And, you know, I did it just in that order and, you know, was up and ready to go, and there were no problems. See what happens when you actually read the directions. Amazing. Anyway, so I did the install on there, which is really cool. You know, it's a Slackware install, standard thing. I just let it go, and it did its thing, and it worked, and it popped right up, and X wouldn't start at all. And
hey, Dan, restart the camera.
I think the reason the X wouldn't start is because...
it's a really bad picture.
I'm going to get that off there in a minute. I'm still trying to fix it the way I want it to
The
run.
Reason the X wouldn't start, I believe, is because my particular iMac has an ATI Rage 128.
Okay.
For the graphics card in there. And I believe that is somewhat problematic in the Macs. So, and actually, while it was downloading, while it was installing Slackintosh, I was actually downloading both the live client and the install CD for Ubuntu, just because I figured, hey, you know, if one doesn't work,
just in case.
Yeah, I'll flip it around and check.
Somebody
it out.
Just popped in.
Is that hello? Is anybody there? Nobody there. I'll keep talking. Anyway, so I downloaded the two Ubuntu CDs while I was doing the install and working. And, you know, and that's cool. Like, talk about multitasking, right? I just upgraded my memory in my workstation. Those of you who read my weblog know this, but I just upgraded my memory to a gig in my workstation, so my workstation is just like cruising along. It's a beautiful thing. So I'm doing, and you know, and I have my fast DSL connect, or not DSL, but my fast cable connection now, 7 megabit down. And so I'm downloading two ISOs in the background while I'm doing my work through a SSH VNC session, okay, at work. And then on this other machine on the iMac, I'm installing Slackware next to me. And I just, you know, that was a really cool geeky moment for me. I kind of had to sit back and drink a Coke for a minute, you know, have a Coke and a smile. Anyway.
Some Coke.
So I install Slackintosh on this thing.
Some Coke and a smile.
And it boots right up. And the first thing I notice is that maybe some of you guys can help me. I don't know how many people run, you know, run Linux on their Macintoshes. But first thing I notice is that the left 2-3 columns of text, okay, are just completely drop off the side of the screen. So obviously there's an issue there with adjusting where the stuff is on the screen, or the refresh rates or something like that. Because like these iMacs, they don't have little horizontal and vertical adjustments, you know, like a monitor does. So there's got to be another way to handle that. And I remember having to do something before on an old world Mac install on some computer. I remember Linux install on an old world Mac. I remember putting some kind of setting in Yellow Dog at one time that tweaked it so that it shifted the text over a little bit.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about too. Because I had to do that before. You used to have to do that in like Red Hat.
Right.
I don't remember what the command is for.
There's a way to do it though, and I want to find out how to do that.
Do you?
Because that annoys the hell out of me.
Do you want my XORG file?
Yeah, I'd love to take your XORG file and look at it and compare it to mine.
Somebody's on.
Hello.
Hey, what's up? Can you guys hear me?
Barely.
It's Pat. You sound bad, Pat.
You sound real bad too.
What are you calling on?
I'm calling a regular phone.
Is it a cordless phone?
When I call in with the soft phone, I can hear you guys talking, but you can't hear me. Let me try it again.
Are you sure you don't have the mute button on?
When I call, we don't have a problem. When I call from my phone.
Hello? You there? Still there, Pat?
No, he just dropped off.
Last time that happened to me with the soft phone, it's because I didn't have the 5060 pass through my firewall? 5060 or 8000 or something like that. Anyway, if you're still listening, Pat, check your ports passing through your firewall for your soft phone. Maybe that'll help. What I did was, like, you know, I noticed that the couple lines of text dropped off, and that's all I could get. I couldn't start up XORG in it, or I couldn't start up X, and it all kept getting some errors. So I did some quick Google searching and found some guy from Italy who had his XORG up on the web as the text file.
Okay.
And I grabbed that and pulled that over and put that in place and edited that. You know, I can't speak any Italian. It really would have helped a lot. Because, like, the entire site is in Italian. The only thing you see is, like, xorg.txt. And I forgot, oh, yeah, all right. So I grabbed that, and it is an xorg conf file.
Except it's in Italian.
Yeah, so, pretty much. And I put it in there, and it didn't work the first time. And then I opened up the file and actually looked at it. And he's got the keyboard layout set for Italy, you know?
No, that ought to be fun.
He's back on again.
So I fixed that for a U.S. keyboard layout. And then I had to go down, and then it started up, but it would, like, lock up and freeze. And I remember reading somewhere through Google that it was having problems with the accelerated driver, right? So I went in the XORG conf and I commented out, or I uncommented the no acceleration line. And then it started right up and ran. Beautiful, you know. It was a wonderful thing. So, yeah, I really want to. You're going to have to send me a copy of your XORG comp. So I want to check it out.
Yeah, I'll put it back up tomorrow.
Compare it to mine.
I'll send it over to you.
But, you know, after that, I was just like, you know, I was just, you know, God, I love Slackware to begin with, man. And Slackware on your iMac is just like, that's like the coolest thing, I'm telling you. It's just neat. But anyway, I was going to tell you about the sound. I had a problem with sound, too. Didn't look like the sound was working. However, if I went in and did an LS mod, of course, the modules were loaded.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. The modules may not be loaded on mine right now.
I would check it out. I bet they are, Here's the deal. In order for you to actually hear anything, you have to go in and set up your sound through your ALSA mixer, right? So you go into ALSA mixer, and you have to turn all your sound up, but it's not the volume control that controls the volume on your iMac.
It's the PCM.
It's the speaker control
that
controls this. See, now I had my volume cranked all the way up, and I had the line stuff cranked all the way up, and all the everything, and the PCM, I cranked all the way up, and the beep and everything, and I got nothing. And then I finally went in and turned the speaker up,
and the
speaker is actually the speakers of the iMac, is what it amounts to. I think the volume is probably a line out volume, like if you do the jack.
Yeah, because you have line out over on the side there.
That's probably. I don't know. I haven't tested it really, but that would be my guess. But it's the speaker volume that controls the speakers on the iMac. Once you get that turned up, it just goes, man.
Well, you have to play around with that.
The other thing now is I got to keep CD player working, but that was all right.
Plugging it in and unplugging it because I have no room to put it anywhere right now. My desk turned out to be somewhat smaller than I had anticipated for all the stuff.
Going fishing. I'm going fishing. But there's no ice around here anymore.
Yep. So pretty much, that's what I did. That was my my afternoon while I was working.
While you were working,
every few seconds I had to, you know, glance over at my Slackware installing itself on there, and
must be nice to be able to do it while you're working.
Well, yeah, but it's an unattended thing, you know what I mean? Like, I got up and got a Coke after I answered my door and got the iMac, and I set it on a table, and I turned it on. I stuck the Slackintosh CD in, and I let it install.
Yeah, you don't really have to do anything. You just walk away.
And I did I was doing my work and working along, and because I don't have a chance to do anything else. And when I'm working, they IM the crap out of me. So I'm typing along, doing my IMs, and it was just a cool thing to be able to look over, you know, glance to the right of me to this computer and see Slackware installing on a Macintosh. It was just kind of neat.
Cool.
I liked it. But I would like to try Ubuntu on it sometime too, maybe. Just because I think there's probably better software support for it, even though I can compile whatever the hell I want.
I was going to say, you can probably compile whatever you need, but...
That's not my...
Well, I had Ubuntu running, and, you know, for me, everything I needed to do worked.
Right.
For it. I don't know what you're looking for to do particularly,
I'm looking for a better CD player. Like, I want to be able to... I don't know why. I never, ever do that. I never put an audio CD in and play it on my computer, ever.
Yeah.
I do, however, rip my audio CDs on my computer, and I use Grip for that.
Yes.
But, like, the audio CD player that comes by default in Slackintosh is that KDE one, was KSCD or something like that.
Yeah,
I don't like KDE, right? I just don't. I'm not running KDE on the thing. I'm running XFCE on it, which is probably why it, you know, runs nice and fast.
Well, even with the KDE on there, it does run very nicely. I do have to, I played around with it a little bit over the weekend.
Uh-huh.
Is when I finally, because I got Slackintosh on there like 2 months ago. When I gave you the disc is when I did it.
Uh-huh.
And then because I couldn't get X up and running, I sort of put the machine off in the corner and went on and did other things. And over the weekend, I was just like, wait a second, here's an Ubuntu CD. Let me try that
right
on it, and got it up and running and played with it for a little while. And it does run very nicely, I think. Even though you think that, you know, KDE is, you know, because it's running, what, a 3.4
uh-huh.
with it, which is the latest version. You figure that's going to drag it down, but it really doesn't too bad.
You know what?
Hey, we can hear you.
What?
Yeah, I can hear the damn fan going, too.
Everybody can hear the fan going.
We're definitely going to have to get that thing out of this room and somewhere else. Like, I don't know what to do about that.
Where the hell are you going to put it, Dan?
I don't know. I just don't know.
What we need to do is just put like a half box around it, two corners, to keep it off into the corner with some of that little foam padding.
What we need is to
have a box.
We need to solicit donations from our listeners so that Dan can get like a Mac Mini or something like that to use for the server. And that way he could get like three or four of those and have that do all the stuff that we need to do, and it's only taking up like, you know, I mean, you know, if it got loud, he could put them in a suitcase kind of thing.
A Mac Mini, it never gets loud.
Pass that to the wife, who was supposed to come on last week, not this week, maybe 2 weeks.
I'm lazy and crabby.
Because everybody wants...
Lazy and
wants,
crabby. Uh-oh.
Stay nobody away. Nobody wants any
That'd
more
be
sausage
good for the show.
Pass.
What?
That would be good for the show.
That'd be good for the show. I can be lazy and crabby if that's what you want.
Yeah, here's a great image.
What's that?
You gotta see this.
I'm frightened.
Oh, it's not up there yet. Just keep talking. Are we supposed to call the guest or what?
I don't know. I thought Pat said they were calling us on the asterisk line.
Maybe they're having a problem getting through too. I don't know what the I got.
You
no
got
problem.
Right through. So
no
apparently there isn't
through.
A problem getting through.
I don't know.
Looks like Alan. Anyway, so yeah, I was having a lot of fun with that. I thought that was really cool. Doing the thing on it. Does anybody even care? Like you guys that are listening on the IRC, do you even care? Do you even care that I was installing Linux on an old Macintosh today?
Okay.
Do you even care?
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Oh, how you doing? Look at that. Now, you can't see anything, but...
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I hear you guys. A little great. Bit of a lag.
You sound a lot better this time.
I don't know what the deal was, man. I was trying to call on the regular phone, and you sounded choppy. You could barely make out the message on the answering system. But now you sound okay.
Well, the answering machine, the answering system there, the message is really, really low.
Yeah, I'm going to have to re-record that audio on that. I don't know what's going on.
I'm going to send an email to these guys and see if they can connect, okay?
Okay.
And I'm going to drop off. Did you guys announce about the Linux World Expo yet?
No, not yet. No. Not yet. Go for it.
Here, this is... do you want to go for it? Go ahead, Pat. I don't want to steal your thunder.
We're going to the Linux World Expo, everybody.
Hang on.
We got accepted.
That's great, man. You did a heck of a job getting us accepted.
Yes, thank you.
We've been invited. We're going to Boston, baby.
We're going to Boston. We're going to be in the .org pavilion, so y'all can come and visit us there. However, we're going to, you know, we still need your help with stuff, too. Like, we got to know what kind of crap we should have there for you and, you know, any information or anything that you guys are interested in seeing about us, and that sort of thing.
So I guess we could take off the banner on the front
Page.
I need to take
the banner off, and we need like booth design ideas and stuff too. So,
a table,
yeah. A table where we sit.
This is low budget. We're getting the table and chairs.
We point at people and say, "Ah."
I don't think we're going to get bandwidth. That's probably out of the question.
You know what? I really don't know. I wanted to talk to I just lost. I lost my entire thought.
I'm on the wrong show. I'm on the wrong show chat. I'm on Infonomicon. I'm not on
Infonomicon's chat.
Why isn't anyone talking to me here?
I'm like, somebody on Infonomicon's talking about Susa. I was about to say something about Susa, but I realized I'm on the wrong show. I'm like, man, it's awful quiet.
No, I wanted to ask around to some of the people who have actually been, you know, invited to the .org booth. And for a project and find out what kind of, you know, what kind of stuff that they had available for them, because I haven't seen, you know, even though you have that link to information, I didn't really see any pertinent information about what kind of stuff we're going to have there available to us. So perhaps we will get more information. That would be good.
Probably once the invites go out, we'll get more information.
Remember to bring our own equipment, because if we send somebody else, it's going to cost us like $250.
They're supposed
bucks.
To send us some information this week.
That would be good. This week is getting over fast, though.
Alan will be our booth babe.
That's right.
No.
We're
going to Alan and some pasties.
No.
Your wife's coming, right? She could be our booth babe.
Yeah, my wife is coming, although I don't Don't know that she'll actually go to the show.
Tell her Tim McGraw's going to be there.
You don't think if you gave her a couple of pasties, you could tell her she would, you could get her to come if Tim McGraw was going to be there? We'll secretly sneak in and steal her cardboard cutout and, like, you know, we'll parade it through the back of the crowd just far enough away that she can't tell. It's not really him.
Oh, she would know. She, you know, she's one of those sick people with that sense, you know.
Wait, this is a bunch of geeks. Tim McGraw isn't here.
We're definitely looking forward to meeting all you guys. So if you guys are in Boston and you're at the Linux World Expo, please come by and say hello.
Definitely. Definitely. Don't just come by and say hello. Like, come by and hang out and, you know, because I figure, you know, after the first day, we're going to be bored shitless. So if you want to come hang out and talk, that'd be awesome.
Reset the cam there.
Why?
Get another picture.
It's the same picture for, like...
I have to do it manually because my thing's not working right. It's
Dan's thing is not working.
Guys, I'm going to drop off. Hopefully these guys can connect that, okay?
Somebody else is...
All right, Pat.
There. Talk to you.
Later. Yeah, anyway.
I think somebody else...
So, the computer show is coming up. And I just upgraded my my workstation at home to a gig of RAM.
Yeah.
And got my little Apple iMac. I finally got an iMac. I've been waiting how many years now? How many years have you been since they came out with those G3 iMacs?
That's been a while.
It was like
plus you were looking
5 years or something like that?
2 years ago at Trenton Commuter Fest, you were looking for one.
Yeah, but I bought that G3.
And I got it for first.
Because I got a blue and white G3, right? Which is which was cool, but now like you can't install anything on it because it's some kind of thing with the motherboard. Like, I guess all the channels of the IDE interface on the motherboard will, like, run together, so it's really hard to get stuff installed on there.
Hmm.
I was thinking about stopping somewhere and getting an external USB 2.0 DVD rewriter, right?
That would probably work for it.
For the iMac?
No, because I want one to have anyway, right? To use on all my computers. That way I can just swap it back and forth between all the computers. But if I got that, then I could probably plug that in to my blue and white G3 and get an operating system installed on there, because it's not going to be using the hard drive and the CD-ROM that's, you know, internal while it's doing the install. At least, you know, in theory it wouldn't be. However, I don't know if there's some kind of compatibility crap with Macintoshes, you can only have certain external USB peripherals that you can boot from or whatever. I don't know. Dan?
Have no clue.
Dan?
Dan. You were asking me what?
Dan.
You caught me.
I caught him again. He's over there on the Infonomicons to chat again.
No, I was trying to... I thought I heard somebody else pop on.
He's on his male
the
porno chat.
And I was going to the maintenance
I heard that earlier.
To see if how many people are on, and then I got... That's when you asked me a question. How many things can you put on that?
I want to know. Hang on, let me...
You want to know... How far she'll go.
All right. I have a blue and white G3
right.
Macintosh. Okay. It's a Revision 1 Macintosh. Revision 1 blue and white G3. Which means that there's a problem on the motherboard with sharing the IDE channels. So it's very hard in some instances to get an operating system on there, because while you're installing from your CD-ROM drive, you're trying to write through the same channel to the hard drive kind of thing. It's a really pain in the ass kind of thing. What, I don't know how the hell I got anything installed on before, but I did. Now it broke and I got to redo it. So anyway, I can't do it on the way I'm doing it now. It could be that the CD-ROM in there is just crud too. What I was thinking about doing was getting an external USB 2 DVD drive, okay, that I could share between, you know, a dual-layer DVD writer that I can share between all of my machines. What I want to know is if I got a USB 2 DVD drive, and plugged it into that blue and white G3, would it boot from the USB drive? Or is it one of those deals where it has to be some kind of Macintosh-specific thing? You know, like, I know the internal ones.
What are you
going to
boot from?
A CD.
Like what?
I don't know, like anything. Anything that's a bootable CD. I would like to install Slackintosh on there, actually.
The Macs.
But I have to be able to boot from a USB device. I don't know how to do that.
I'm not sure. I'd have to look that up. The Macs we have boot from CD. There's target disk mode. There's a mode that'll show you all the boot, but that's on OS 10. That's on the newer Macs. I'm not sure if that has the capability of booting from a USB device.
Does anybody know?
I believe our guest was trying to call in. Looking at the reports, I have his phone number. I can call him back since he's not on. Do you want me to try and call him back?
Go for it, man.
You talking about Dave?
Oh, well, he is on. Dave, yep. Can you hear us?
Oh, apparently, because he was talking to us and we were talking.
We've been having, Pat's saying we're having issues, and Alan got a new microphone, and things are a little wacky, and I want to apologize for that.
No problem. Yeah, I can hear you guys fine. It is kind of choppy. It's kind of like you're on a cell phone or something and cutting out. I know that's not the case, but it's kind of like what it is.
Yeah, it's weird. Usually it's not like that. But, hey, welcome to the show. Sorry we're delayed in getting to you. We didn't actually realize you were on.
Yep. Well, thanks for having me. Is Tom here also?
Tom? No. Not that I'm aware of.
All right. Well.
Is he supposed to be on with
you?
Okay. It's... Just looking through the list here, the reports, I don't see that he called in at all, but I don't know.
I guess it's just you, so we get to put you right on the spot, and you can tell us all the stuff that he was going to tell us.
If that question was for me, I apologize. I didn't hear any of it.
That's okay. It was a bad joke anyway.
And Pat was unfortunately unable to be with us tonight due to a sick child. So anyway, tonight's guest is Link. Do you want to introduce him, or should tonight's guest is Dave Whittinger, Whitinger.
See, now that's why I wanted to look so that I got the last name right. But Dan took right off with it.
Yeah,
Dave Whittinger from LXer,
formerly from LinuxToday.com, right? The founder of LinuxToday.com, if I'm not mistaken. Correct, Dave?
Yep. I set that up in really kind of back into 1997 when I was working for Red Hat, back when we had about 20 employees, and we were working at a 5 different little apartment buildings, and started making a little news, internal page for the Red Hat employees. And when I left Red Hat, I kind of took it with me, and after a few months, I registered LinuxToday.com and brought Dwight Johnson in, and he helped out. And the two of us together just kind of built it up to be, what it was. And we kept LinuxToday around for about 12 months, and then we sold it to Internet.com. At the height of the Internet bubble, the company comes to you and offers you, a sizable portion of money. You don't say no,
That's it, huh?
Yeah, so we had a good time with. I really missed doing Linux news. I didn't regret, getting paid for what I did, but I kind of regretted not being able to be in the news area anymore. And so, after several years had gone by, I worked with LWN.net for a little while, and eventually just started LXer by myself. And it's good to be back in doing Linux news again. This is one of my passions. Of course, Linux is my passion, so I love being in this community, and this is kind of like, everybody wants to contribute something, and this is my contribution, is news.
And you do a darn good job over there at LXer.
Thanks. A lot of the credit goes to Tom. Tom Adelstein came in. Well, I guess it's been
This
is Tom?
Tom?
Hey, Tom. I was just talking about you.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Tom came in about, I guess, 6 months ago, or he might correct me, but it's been some time ago, and really the day-to-day functioning of Elixir is now done by Tom. And if you've been happy with what you've seen on the site for the past 6 months, really Tom gets the credit for it. And I've sort of taken more of a backseat role with the whole site. I'm the programmer, and I, you know, manage the thing and keep it running and add features when they're needed. And I don't spend as much time as I'd like to spend on it, but Tom makes the editorial decisions, and he manages all of the volunteer contributing editors that we have. And just generally, he's a hands-on guy. He's kind of like the chief operating officer, to put it in corporate terms. I tell you, for sure, Elixir wouldn't be much of a site if it wasn't for Tom. So.
Yeah, I noticed in the past, what, half a year or so, it's really changed and picked up a lot. I mean, it used to be a little, you know, it had some really good articles, but in the past 6 months, it's been really...
Really taken off, yeah.
Yeah, a lot more content. A lot more excitement.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Okay, good. You know, what we did, essentially, is we cranked up an editorial staff, and instead of just editing content and presenting content, we started creating content too. So what we do is we seek out information and people, and we essentially write articles. And our staff's international, and we've got people from South America, you know, from the Middle East, Europe. We do have people that come on from Asia, but they don't feel as free to express themselves.
Gee, I wonder why. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some issues about you know, about coming on and writing any kind of an editorial or what's happening in Asia, and that's from every Asian country. So we would love to have an Asian person working with us in our editorial group. We have about 10 editors right now. So it's gone from just a newswire to, I think we've done around 200 features since I joined in September. If that makes sense.
Yeah. For anybody actually who goes to Elixir, yeah, it makes perfect sense.
The interesting thing about it is that we have some really talented people that had a lot to contribute. So what I did is I watched the site, just who made comments and things like that, and you know what were their comments. And if I saw someone that was contributing significantly, I would occasionally take one of their better comments and put it up as a comment of the day, and just to show them they could actually write a feature article. Comment of the day is not what we do every day, but when we have really strong, good content, we put it up there, and those are sometimes the most viewed articles we have, you know, for a week. And so it's really interesting. And then I would just approach them and say, you know, would you like to work with us as an editor? And that's how we've gotten our editorial staff together. There's just, you know, make an invitation. And a lot of people are just really good writers, but they've never had the opportunity. So we give them an opportunity and, you know, give them permissions on the site, things that they wouldn't have. And we have an editorial forum. So as people want to learn something, they can make a request, or if they want something on the site for Dave to do, he's got a thread that's called Wish List. So he gets to take a look at all these requests that people have about how we change the site. That's been really useful. But it's just been amazing to find these really talented people out there that probably would never have an opportunity to contribute any kind of content on a high volume website or even in the print area. And so, you know, they get an opportunity and they get to flex their wings. our editorial policy is very different than some of the sites. So we have one editor in particular that we invited on. He's a very well-known editor, and he writes for popular and well-known publication. But she's so hammered by, or hampered actually, by their editorial policies that she said, you know, I would just like to be able to say this. I said, well, say it. And so she was thrilled to come on and be able to, you know, write articles that she'd always wanted to write, but she was unable to do.
Now, does she have to write those under a pen name if she's still working for that company?
Yeah, well, she writes under a pen name, yeah.
Okay. A different pen name than the one she does from the other company. Okay.
And then we have people that have written before, but, you know, just occasionally they'll contribute. And then we have people that are contributing pretty regularly.
So is that your trick for getting good content is to really just hand the reins right over to your authors and your editors?
Well, it's not so much that as we're not hampered by... we're not hampered by advertisers.
Right.
We don't have to worry about certain advertisers saying, you know, well, we don't want you saying that, and you can't say that, and that's not appropriate. And we do have guidelines, but it's not that we just turn it over and say, you know, say whatever you want to, but write what you want to. Let it, you know, if it's appropriate, and it's always been appropriate, we'll put it up there. And one of our UK editors wrote an article last week, and the article said, "Boy, you know, he says goodbye Google." That was the name of the article, and it was a really successful article. It wasn't very long, but he just had a problem with the fact that Google was going into China, and he had an issue with human rights, and I think being European. And being from the UK, he was a little more adamant about it than I think a U.S. writer would have been. To him, that was just, you know, a natural thing that I'm just not going to use them because, you know, the way they're going about it. That was a very, very big article as far as reads was concerned. And so, yeah, he wouldn't probably have been able to write that on... you know, on eWeek, I don't think he would have been able to write it. But I don't know if that's a secret, if that's what you're asking.
Well, yeah, and I'll add to that, Tom. This is Dave again. I would kind of view Elixir as something like modeled in some ways sort of like after the Linux kernel or, you know, any other big piece of software like GNOME or KDE. You know, individual people typically don't sit down and create a whole entire desktop environment. What they do is they pick something existing and they go in and they look at it and they see, you know, areas that they'd like to improve, and they improve it and send a patch back to the author. And open source software, free software, enables people to do that kind of thing. And I kind of see Elixir as the same way. Is, you know, you can't just read eWeek or PC World and say, you know, I'd like to see an article about, you know, asterisk, and so, you know, you just write it, and they're not going to publish that. But on Elixir, we will, and it's kind of enabling people to publish things that, you know, they never would have. And, you know, in order to get your views out, either you have to find a site that will publish them, or else you have to go make your own site. And most people aren't going to make their own site, and so, you know, we're there to be that platform for people.
You know, what I really notice about Elixir is that, well, you know, aside from the fact that it carries a real specific genre of content, you know, about open source and Linux and stuff like that, there are some other newsish sort of websites out there that do the same sort of thing, and I won't make any mention of any names, like Slashdot. And what I get from Elixir is that the stories that you have there are more professionally put together. Like, it seems to me they're more professionally put together, number one. And number two, like, there isn't that underlying feel of hostility with some of the stories that you get there. You know what I mean? It's just a cleaner...
Yeah, the Slashdot editors have a lot of agendas that it seems like they're kind of putting out.
It does.
I quit reading Slashdot a long time ago. Thankfully, when I found Dig.com, I never went back to Slashdot.
Yeah, amen to that.
No, it's so freeing. I just love not going to Slashdot anymore. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you can tell that, you know, for example, and I'm not making kind of statement, but you can tell that the guys there are big fans of evolution, because anytime some scientific thing comes out about, you know, that seems to prove some part of evolution, it's going to be posted to the Slashdot homepage. And whether it's true or not, you know, that's not why people go to the site. They go to the site to learn about cool technology stuff. And,
sure.
You know, it seems like they're, well, anyway, you hear what I'm saying. But, you know, with Elixir, Tom, I hope I'm not speaking for you, but, you know, maybe I am, but from my perspective, you know, if we see an article that we don't agree with, we're still going to post it. And you know, the people that read it can make up their own mind. It seems kind of ridiculous to censor out some content just because you don't agree with it or it doesn't, you know, promote your own agenda. I mean, we have agendas, but, you know, if there's a pro-DMCA article out there or something, you know, we're still going to link to it and let people read it and make up their own mind. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's really true.
Yeah, I just wanted to, you know, as someone who's not directly affiliated with you guys, I just wanted to let you know that's something that I appreciate as a reader of your site is to go in there and be able to see articles about different things in an objective manner and not, like I said, not with that underlying sense of hostility towards any one particular thing or any agenda that seems to be getting pushed along, sort of thing.
Well, we're using our guidelines essentially in our procedures are traditional in a journalistic sense. I mean, we do top line editing, and we do we do top editing and also line editing. So when an article gets into our queues, if it's one of our articles, we essentially will go through and first do a line edit, and then I come in and look at the top. You know, what is the title? What's the descriptions? And I essentially edit it too, so that you know we're actually working in a journalistic way. We also use like this Chicago, manual of style, and we try not to use a passive voice. So it's a professionally run editorial staff, and we allow people to put some things in. Now, some people will come in and just make really interesting comments about, you know, this shouldn't really even be on this site. How come this is on this site? Well, there are some people that won't want to read that, and I can tell by the reads. So, you know, if I have a few thousand reads on one article, and some guy comes in and makes the comment that he doesn't see why it should be on the site, I kind of just laugh because, we had one person that everything that we put on there, he would comment and say, this is an abuse of free software. You guys are, you know, writing and promoting products that leech from free software. Well, obviously he was. The only thing that existed was free software. He didn't believe in open source software. So all of a sudden we were bad and wrong because of that. And every single article he would hit. So, I mean, that'll happen. You'll just find people that are very agenda-oriented, and they'll make comments. Then there's another thing that we do, which is it's very rare that we do it, but if people get into really flame wars, we'll intervene. We'll send them an email. And if they don't stop, we'll moderate it. And I've had some pretty good response because I've sent some emails to people and said, I don't mind you taking a position or arguing your point. I just don't want you attacking a person's being. I don't want you going after them you know, for who they are.
This is the whole you're an asshole email, right? we have those on our show too. Everybody has one of those. You know, we had one on our, well, we've had several, but we had one on our show that used to keep writing us emails after every show telling us how worthless our content was.
Well, I don't mind them saying that our content's worthless or that, you know, I don't mind them saying that. And I don't mind them saying, you know, that they don't like our behavior, okay? But I don't but I really don't like them saying, you're a jerk or you don't know what you're talking about and you're dumb and you're brain dead, those kinds of things. I mean, it's just, or, you know, you should be shot, you know, things like that. those are things where they're going after people, and I don't like that. We don't have much of it, but when we do, I read all the comments, but I do write the person, and I do ask them not to do it. And occasionally they'll come in, and not occasionally, but almost all the time they'll come in and they'll change their comment, or they won't comment anymore. So I just don't like trolls, basically.
Yep.
That are only there to flame blame.
Don't,
you know,
feed
flame
the trolls, right? Yep.
That's Dave's famous. Don't feed the trolls.
Don't feed the trolls. I know how that works.
Yeah. That's one thing nice about us is we have a tremendous amount of readers. Last month we had almost 300,000 unique IPs come to the site, but not a whole lot of people are posting comments. And the people that do post are, almost without exception, are posting, you know, interesting comments that add value to the story. And so we don't deal with the kind of problems that a lot of other bigger sites deal with. And I hope it stays that way. Those trolls can just find some other place. We don't have a scoring system. You know, like you can't assign points to posts. Every post is treated equally. And that's how it was on Linux Today, too. And I think that that's worked out really well. And it's kind of like just creating the right atmosphere in, you know, with all the readers. And so the people that post, you know, they kind of know what the standards of the society that they're in here are. And, you know, people like to be in a society, and they want to conform to the society's rules. And you know, so
it's,
I think,
really
that's
interesting to, yeah, it's really interesting to see how many journalists are registered on our site and visit regularly. When I talk about journalists, I'm talking about the people that you see writing articles elsewhere actually come and spend a lot of time, I mean, spend a lot of time on Lexer. And it's really fulfilling when you find authors and journalists and people of substantial value coming on. I was really surprised when, well, I guess I wasn't surprised, but John Hall comes on and he'll post articles and occasionally, and then he also comments occasionally. So he's part of our readership group, and so are a lot of other people. I mean, I only mention John because he goes by his name.
That would be John Mad Dog Hall.
Yes. But, I mean, he goes by his name, so other people don't go by their name. But,
You mean most people post under a pseudonym?
That's very true. You know, I might be on there posting under, you know, five or six pseudonyms.
Oh, I hope not.
with my northern accent.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because,
you know, that can be cured. I used to have a Wisconsin accent before I moved to Texas.
Yeah. Mine was New York, so I'm sorry, but you can tell it really has changed. Anyway, but that's—I don't know how to explain it. It's just the community that makes the site work, and then I don't know, Dave, because you keep up with the numbers more than I do. But we have a lot of people register every single week. It's just remarkable. I mean, I'm always seeing new people on the website. That I mean, who were they a week ago?
You know, people don't even have to register to read the site. In fact, the only reason why you would register is if you want to post a comment. I don't think there's any other reason to register. there's no features or anything, but yet we have almost 2,500 people that have signed up. I can't figure out why they're signing up, but and we had six people sign up in the last 24 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. We've had 13,000 posts and over 18,000 stories posted in the last 2 years.
Well, that's really great. That says something about the open source and the Linux community, then, that you get that kind of response and the fact that, like I said, it's a, you know, like it's a non-hostile site, too.
Right, right. Well, and it's true. I think that people like to sign up just because, you know, they like the site and they come every day, so I figure, well, I'll just log in. And, you know, there are features, I guess, now that I think about it. Like, for example, if you don't like the way the site looks, you can sign in and then modify your preferences and, you know, just redo the entire layout, and it'll be saved on our site, and every time you come to the site, we'll show it to you with your new format.
I'm sorry, man. I'm laughing at you because I know you, in the beginning, you said you're the programmer of the site, and you're saying, well, now that I think about it, there are features out there.
Well, you know, that's... Yeah, well, most programmers will...
Gotcha.
You know, they're this way. You know, I have to ask my wife, hey, you know, do I have that, you know, I have to ask her about using my own software. Do we have the feature that does this or that? And
right.
Yeah, you programmed that 3 years ago.
I do the same thing, too, when I program. Mm-hmm. Now that you brought it up, I have a quick question for you. What do you actually call the site? Like, I say Alexer, I just heard Lexer.
Uh-huh.
How about a definitive answer?
What do you call it, Tom?
I call it Lexer.
Yeah. Well, when I first created, I called it Alexer.
Because
it's kind of like a Linux. It's like a Linuxer. You know, a person uses Linux, kind of like a Linuxer. And so, Alexer.
There's a lot of people that refer to it as Alexer, even our editorial staff. Because, you know, if you read Dave's letter, it's what he says. There's the introduction.
Right.
He says it's Alexer, and so they say it. So when we get on a conference call or something, I'm the only one calling it Alexer. But I never did read his introduction.
Time to do that, Tom.
Yeah, well, I know. I did read it, but I mean, I didn't read it originally.
Right.
And, I read that this guy that started Linux Today, who I met in 1999, in the spring of 1999, and started writing for and participating with, had had come back into the business. And so I said, Dave, would you like me to start writing for you again? He said, yeah, absolutely. And so that's kind of how we got back together. But when he first started Linux Today, I said, you let me do some... Let me do some features for you. And that's how, and we started doing that. And then I got a show like this, only it was on Radio Street. And so it got announced, you know, it was twice a week, and every time we had it, we announced the guests and everything else. So we had a lot of interaction. And Dave lived in the same town, basically. I mean, actually, he lived north, but in the same, metroplex.
Yeah, we both lived in Dallas. It's a long story about how Tom and I met, but we go way back to the Linux Today days, and never did work together before Alexer, but Tom has proven himself to be really just a great person to work with. It's just been a real pleasure. I'm not just saying that; I mean that. So,
well, I'll tell you what: it's obvious that that you guys have a good working relationship going on over there, because, you know, like I said, the site is fantastic and the content is really good, and it just works. It works for the community, and I want to know what kind of cool things, what sort of innovative things can we expect to see from Alexer in the not too distant future? What are you working on?
Well, Tom would probably give a different answer, because Tom's focused on generating great content is where his focus is, and I tend to be on the more the programmer side of things. For one thing, that's exciting for us, maybe not exciting for other people, is we're trying to figure out how to get people paid, you know, for the work they're doing on Alexer, and we've got a guy who's going to try to started interfacing with some Linux companies and sell some sponsorships and things. And I'm really looking forward to that. I'd like to be able to, you know, to pay some money to, you know, editors and, you know, contributors and all that stuff. From the technology side, there have been a lot of different ideas. And, you know, we've talked about, you know, ideas of, like, going the dig route and letting people, you know, select the stories for the homepage. But it's really been discussions. I think that kind of user-driven technology is really exciting to me. But really it's something that we haven't really talked about much lately. Our focus right now has just been continuing with what we have been doing and growing our readership and, you know, improving our content.
Yeah, some of our editors want more of an interactive site. And there's been a lot of really remarkable suggestions. And we thought about them, and once we start to change the site or do some programming, well, those things will happen. But, I mean, there's things like, depending on reads and everything, is how the stories would be positioned on the page. So if, you know, if there's a lot of reads or if, I mean, the articles would move up rather than move off. That's an interesting concept if you think about it, because some stories come on and you just really can't tell if they're hot or not. I mean, we do have a story of the day, the hottest story of the day, and that's sometimes that'll stay the hottest story of the day for, you know, 3 days. It gets so many hits. But then there's other stories that you know, you can't tell really who, you know, what are the popular stories. So what? But one of our editors recommended, and everybody seemed to like, was as the stories got more hits, they would move up rather than move down. If that makes sense, because they roll off the page pretty quickly. We see when I got there, we were doing about 24 stories a day, and I think it's more. It's like a lot more than that now. And we probably kill about 80% of the submissions, if you can imagine. So, you know,
I used to do that by myself. That was terrible.
Do what?
I used to manage all the submissions by myself. There'd be over 100 every day. I have to delete. You know, you delete, like, out of 100, you delete, like, 70 or 80 of them. Then go through and start picking out the news for the day. Big job.
And then what order to publish it in, too. That's another thing that we do.
Right, that's
right.
You know what I find interesting about your site when I pull it into my RSS aggregator is that when I click on an article, I get the original article. I don't get, like, in some other news sites, I get, like, their little blurb about it. I actually get the article.
That is one thing that definitely sets us apart from all the other Linux news websites, is that we are, as far as I know, unless somebody started doing this recently, we're the only people that do that. And we basically pioneered the whole idea of just giving it away. And, you know, in programming, you say, well, if it takes me 8 hours to make a feature that saves a million people 10 seconds every day, it's worth doing it for the greater good. You know, to spend the hour of the day programming it. And it's the same thing. It wastes people's time to click on it and then have to go to this page and read that paragraph again, then click again. Ridiculous. There's no reason for that kind of stuff. So let's not insult our users by trapping them on our site. Let's just send them onto the content. And it's because of that that we have such a popular RSS feed. We have a tremendous amount of subscribers to the RSS feed. Tremendous. More people read Elixir by RSS than by the homepage. And we're cool with that.
Yeah, it's remarkable. People tell me that all the time. And when I look at our log stats, it's amazing how many hits we get. And I mean, people love it that they don't have to do that. One of the sites that syndicates us and just takes our RSS feed and then puts it on its site is one of our top referrers.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, even though, I know it sounds strange, but even though people don't have to come to our site. They see that feature, and then they want to come see what's going on at the site, which is kind of interesting. But that's
right, that site is displaying our logo and then the headlines. And people click on the logo like crazy. Like, what is it, like 100 times a day or something?
No, it's more than that. It's like 300 or 400 times a day. That's just one of the, just one stat. I mean, but they read a lot, too. I mean, they click on articles a lot, too. So it's kind of interesting. And that is not a high volume site by any means. But we also are on a lot of Lugs. The Lugs put us on there, and there's been a lot of other websites around the globe. Actually, this last month was strange because 60% of our readership was U.S. based, but typically 50% of our readership is U.S. based, and then the other 50% is global. And so we have people that come from 165 countries, and some of them are very active. Australia, UK, France. I think it's in France, like our number two. I think it's our number two site. UK, the Netherlands. I mean, just Russia. It's just a remarkable. I was noticing recently in the list that Jordan, we have kind of a lot of readers from Jordan, so it's kind of fun. But anyway, that's an interesting aspect of it. I wanted to go back to your question because I didn't finish it. Dave talked about what you can expect from him. I mean, from the programming and the interactivity, but from the content side, we're also making some changes. That'll show up. Everything's going to be similar to the way it was, with the addition of I'm training our people to do more investigative work, and so we're actually interacting with companies and vendors and projects to find news where it wouldn't otherwise get reported. And I had made a complaint to the Dallas Morning News. I know the president of the Dallas Morning News about our technology section. We have a sports section in Dallas that's almost, it's bigger than any other section. And they have maybe five editors covering one team. It's really strange. And all this really high quality stuff. But when it comes to our technology sector, which Dallas is one of the top, I guess, four or five technology centers in the United States, there's no technology news. So I complained about it. And what they did is they had a panel where they brought in all the VCs in Dallas, and then they asked them, is there anything going on in Dallas? And they said, no, nothing's happening in Dallas. Well, of course, VCs don't know what's going on here because they can't fund it, you know. And so there's 250 to 350 telecom companies that are engaged in things like VoIP technology in the Dallas area. And nobody's telling their story. And there's one in particular that's had a tremendous amount of success building Asterix phone, PBX systems.
Right. Novo One? Is it Novo One?
No. It's a company you would never have heard of. But
On point.
Right now they're
On Point.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's one of them.
On Point is a part of Novo One, which is a conglomerate umbrella company. I actually work for Novo One.
Okay.
I work for Novo One in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. So I work very close with them. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Okay, well, these guys are advertising for Linux people
mm-hmm.
nationally. It's kind of interesting, but they would like to have some people here, and I guess it's Richardson or Plano. I mean, that's a story. And then there's another story that just never got picked up, and it makes me a little cuckoo, and that is there's a system in the Homeland Security called the Emergency Response Network System. And this was a LAMP project that was done by a company over on the west side of the Metroplex. The lady's name is Jo Balderas, and her company's called YHD Software. And YHD Software, in an outreach program, wrote this LAMP application that it was a database, and it also could get to all of the people involved in the 16 strategic infrastructures that Tom Ridge outlined. These are the most important things, like airlines and stuff like that. But before he ever did that, she did this for the FBI, and she gave it to them, open source software, a LAMP application using Linux, you know, Apache, MySQL, and PHP. Well, on 911, that system was used. It was the only one in existence that had an emergency response program, but it was used to get the planes out of the air and to manage everything that went on that day. And then it also was used for the space shuttle, and it's been used by you know, emergency networks, you know, in the state and local. And so it's a huge success. And Tom Ridge came to Dallas when he was still secretary, held a press conference, and gave this woman an award. And then they decided to deploy it everywhere in the U.S. I think that's a pretty good story. I can get the Dallas Morning News to show up to the press conference even. I mean, the fact that Ridge was in town was kind of important, but they weren't going to report on Linux. And I just thought that was really interesting, especially as much Linux is deployed in their operations, you know. But I couldn't get their editors to do that. So what we're doing is we're actually finding companies, talking to them, and we're digging up success stories, case stories, how did you do it, letting them write how-tos, and helping those companies become known in the world. Because there's a lot of things that are going on. I wrote an article about a project in Egypt and in Jordan, and it was called Building Bridges and Building Bridges and Keeping Track of Water. But there's a open source Linux water maintenance program in Jordan, and Jordan has a problem where they have all these wells, but they don't have, and people are supposed to go read and tell them how much water there is in those wells and things like that, but they were never able to get accurate reads, and they think they would have water to irrigate, but they wouldn't have any. So what they did is they put a real-time SMS Linux embedded gauge on those wells, and then they set up a database, and then that they had that information real time all the time. Well, that turned out to be this huge thing for the Middle East because every country there has problems with water. And that's a project that nobody would even talk about. And it's on SourceForge, which is really surprising. So these are the kinds of things we're looking for. We're looking for those kinds of stories. And, you know, there's some companies like, you're talking. You said OnPoint. Is that the name of your company?
Yeah, OnPoint. On? Mm-hmm. OnPoint okay, so is the name of a part of our company, which is called Nova One, right?
Okay. Well, and so what we want to do is we want to take and do an article about that company that's here. We can interview them. We can go talk about them and essentially help. There's one other thing to say. So I don't know if you know, but we're picked up by Google News.
Right.
And so that's probably why we get about 165 countries, is that we do about 160 articles. About 160 articles a month get syndicated through Google News from our website. We're often on the front page. So there's a lot of people that submit every kind of press release you can imagine because they know that if it gets put up on our site that it's going to can get a it's going to get an international read. So it helps us to help Linux companies become known. So that's our editorial mission this year.
Well, being on Google News also brings us more traffic. Just, you know, people out there like set up, you know, like Abramoff. You know, Tom, you broke the story of Abramoff months and months ago, and now everybody in the world is talking about him. But anybody who's really into politics sets up like a Google News alert, you know, that emails them anytime a story is posted with certain keywords. And, you know, so somebody's, you know, watching the Abramoff issue, and then Tom posts an article, you know, about his lobbying and the money trail, and, you know, the guy gets an email alert from Google pointing him to the story on our site, and here's a new reader. You know, he'll come in and read the story and like what he sees, and, you know, bookmark it and keep coming back every day.
We posted the whole thing on June 29th, I can imagine, May 29th. And no one had picked up on it. But I had been doing a lot of research on Microsoft because I had, in Texas, I had worked with, I went to the senator and said, let's have an open source bill, and I explained to him how we could save money in the budget, and he said, I like that idea, and then he did his own investigation. And they filed a bill, which, by the way, is the basis of the administrative order signed by Governor Romney up in Massachusetts. Our bill was the model. Well, I'd never seen Microsoft in action before. Never seen them do it, and I couldn't believe how their machinery was working. I could tell you stories you just wouldn't believe. I mean, most people have no idea what these guys do in the political arena, and they wouldn't even imagine it's possible for someone to do those kinds of things. So I started researching them back in 2002, and it was interesting because they came after me in a very subtle way. But I was getting letters from them every day asking, you know, saying that they would give me amnesty on all these issues and things. And it was just unbelievable what we experience from their lobbying efforts. Anyway,
are you going to write more articles about that then? Because I know
I have written an article.
You've written a couple.
I've
know that.
Several. Huh?
So I know you've written a couple. So we can expect more of those kind of articles. Yes.
I've written several.
Yes.
I've actually written articles, and I have documents to prove how they work together, It's really remarkable the things that I've uncovered, but I'd been doing this research for almost 3 years, and then I finally got a break because there was a small little bitty article that Preston Gates and Ellis lobbyist might be involved with Tom DeLay. And so I had all this documentation, and I just basically actually took the actual documentation, which were registrations for the Senate and the House of lobbyists, and I basically had the names of lobbyists who had been actual members of the House or in high positions that were lobbying for Microsoft. It's just an incredibly long list, and I couldn't believe it. So I put that stuff up on an article, and of course it got wide coverage, but I mean, it just, people just, you know, really didn't believe it. I mean, they were saying, ah, come on, this is a conspiracy theory. And then it turned out to be true. And they've come back to the article because they've been searching and they found it. And we doubled the number of reads on that. And so it's the second most read article on our site. But I've written several about it. That's just one example of things. We broke the ODF story before anybody else did, and so now we have that story in our archives, and people find it when they go to search for it. But yeah, I mean, I will write more, but I mean, I don't know what else to write. I wrote one article that explained the tie-in between Ralph Reed, Jack Abramoff, Tom DeLay, Newt Gingrich and the president and Microsoft. And, you know, it's really funny because people just said, you know, this is a conspiracy theory. But it's actual investigative journalism. So, you know, Microsoft had a ton of people that were lobbyists that were that had gotten Governor Bush, the then Governor Bush, now the president, to you know, to take it easy on Microsoft. And when he got in office, et cetera, et cetera. And Ralph Reed, who was one of his top strategists, was working on his campaign, but instead of paying him directly from the campaign because he was getting paid by Microsoft, they got him hired by Enron. He was on the payroll at Enron during the campaign while he was an advisor to the president, and he was getting paid at the same time by Microsoft. And he happened to go to high school with Jack Abramoff, who was working for Preston Gates and Ellis.
Nothing wrong with that, right? Spread the wealth.
Sure.
One of Reed's jobs or missions for Microsoft was to recruit people from Ralph Reed's organization, which I think you know what that is, influential people to lobby the president on their behalf. So they had a lot of people that were high-level contributors, both to the campaign and to the financially and otherwise, for the campaign that were basically lobbying the president. And Reed turned over to turned over their mailing list and their contributors list.
With, you know, with those kind of tactics, I mean, is it, do you ever think it's going to be possible for Linux in the United States to get any kind of significant share in the business market or even in the consumer market? Well, actually, in the consumer market is a tougher road, I think.
Well, you know, it's interesting because CyberLink could make Linux is, you know, I don't know if you know who CyberLink is. It's a company in Taiwan that basically makes most of the entertainment software that runs on Windows, and also I think a lot of it runs on Macs too. But essentially, they supply Mandriva and Turbo Linux with all of the you know, all of their entertainment needs. For example, you can create all the DVDs and do all the things that you can do on XP on Turbo Linux because CyberLink. And that's of course in Japan and China and wherever they market. And the same thing in South America. So if they would and they now have a program of a license any OEM. So you could I think Linspire also uses them.
Right.
So if you wanted to make Linux up to date as far as its multimedia capabilities, CyberLink has already got the stuff there, and all any manufacturer or distributor has to do is just add it and say this is an option, purchase it, and everything's ready to go. So the OEM, like Zandros, could just do it, but Zandros is mostly interested in business market. But yeah, that could happen, and then that would be like the finishing touch, because you could do everything that you can do, you know, with XP and OS X on Linux. We do with CyberLink being able to provide that. So yeah, that would happen. The real problem is that a company that should have been broken up, I don't know how the prosecutor for the case wound up being Al Gore's representative in Florida. But all of a sudden, the prosecutor, who was doing a great job of completely dismantling Microsoft, was now Al Gore's attorney against George Bush. And as soon as Bush got his transition team together, Mr. Boyce was gone. And instead of there being this, continued trial, they handed it over to a judge that didn't know anything about it, and they gave him, they just basically not even a slap on the hand. Now, how much of that was engineered? I think that there's a lot of it engineered. And I think that company shouldn't even be in existence given their practices. They look to me to be in, it doesn't take a genius to sit down with the Sherman and Clayton Acts and figure out how many things they do that are antitrust related. Especially what happened in Massachusetts, and especially when you get into the Abramoff payoffs and things like that, and how much money they paid Abramoff. If you just looked at how much they paid him, how much the BSA paid him, it's just unbelievable. So, to me, if all this stuff does hit the fan and everything gets put out in the open for the public to see, I think it's going to create an aversion to Microsoft. But it's got to get out into the open. People have to report about it, and they have to talk about it. The evidence is there to report on. It's right there. It's right in front of everybody. It's in the registrations of lobbyists. It's the old thing. The article's called Following the Money. If you follow the money, everything is clear as a bell. But, Melinda French Gates is on the board of directors of the Washington Post. Originally that article came out of the Washington Post, was squashed, and suddenly a Preston Gates and Ellis guy was no longer being mentioned as a Preston Gates and Ellis person. But Preston Gates and Ellis paid for, there's receipts for the trip I don't know how many trips, but definitely one trip that Tom DeLay took to Scotland to go play at the club. I think they spent like $500,000 or something like that. And there's receipts. But you don't see it anymore. You don't see it anymore because, you've got Warren Buffett and Melinda French Gates on the board of directors, active board of directors of the Washington Post. But again, if you just follow the money, it's there. And that's kind of our approach. We don't like to do a lot of editorials. But we like to find the data, and we like to verify it, and we like to vet it. And that's one thing that I would say is really something that's professional about Lexer's content, is it is done in a very traditional journalistic way.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff. To change focus a little, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm just saying, to be 6 months ahead of the media on an article, it's like, that was kind of fun, but yeah, it didn't get picked up.
This kind of demonstrates the value that Tom brings. Not of course the only value, but just one of the many things that he really brings to the table at Elixir is he's like a machine. I don't know how he keeps so much in his mind, and he's on track of all this stuff. And he really did. He nailed that Abramoff thing. And he had that, it was last May, that was 9 months ago. And people are just not talking about it. And that was not an isolated incident. So I'm impressed. Good work, Tom.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, great job. It's fascinating stuff, and I encourage all our listeners to go back and read those articles that you posted.
Well, I was fortunate when I was growing up, when I was just out of school and everything, my undergraduate degree was in English and, journalism, but I have, my business degree, too. But one of the things that I was an investigator. and that's one of the things you learn to do when you're a CPA is you become an investigator. And I did investigations. I was on contract. That's how I got into IT also. So, you take that skill set plus the journalism, and it turns you into someone who can find things. I know how to find things. So it's easy for me, but it may not be easy for other people. Anyway, yeah, please go back and read those articles. It'll really shock you. We have. Okay, you had another thing?
Yeah, just a curiosity. What do you guys use to manage the site and to, what do you accept articles? What formats do you accept articles in? Are you using all open source tools, or do you use proprietary tools too?
We're building the site on the technologies of Linux and Apache and MySQL and PHP, but beyond that, it's all written by me. So, back in the old days, when you wanted a website, you made it yourself. And I guess I'm one of those dinosaurs who I'm still stuck in 1997. So if I want a site, I program the whole lot myself.
Well, the software is a name. What's the name of the software, Skyf?
Skiff is what I called it.
Okay. Which and we're at version 5.4?
Is that where we're at?
Yeah.
I don't pay attention to version numbers.
Pretty refined.
Yeah, well, I kind of wrote my own versioning system, and so it automatically updates the version number for me every time I, check in my code, commit my code. It's a pretty complicated system, some 200,000 lines of code throughout the whole deal, and it does a lot, and it does the forums and the newswire and, it's just
content management.
Yeah, it's a content management system. It stands for the Standard Community and Information Facility, which is funny. It's a funny long name.
So it's managed all through your browser right now. That's what you're saying.
Oh yeah.
It's executable internet, basically.
Right.
Application. It's a people call them web. What do they call them? Web services. But Dave's been doing web services since in the 90s.
Right, it's just a name for very old technology.
Yeah, I downloaded, but I don't know if you know this, Dave, but I downloaded the Google toolbar for Firefox.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a spell checker in it. So when I just do all my work right there in your content management system. And I don't have to preview it or anything. I can just basically hit it, and it'll give me all, it'll do all my spell checking and everything.
Right.
Now, do you guys use Linux as your primary desktop then?
Oh, yeah. That's all I
have.
After Tom just spent an hour talking about how evil Microsoft is.
You never know. They could be using OS X.
No, I had a cube, but it didn't last that long, so I don't have that anymore. And besides, on that cube, my wife preferred Yellow Dog Linux. So.
Yeah.
When I got married to my wife almost 10 years ago, I told her, "You can."
Your wife was only 10 years old when you got married.
10 years ago, when we got married.
She was 10 years old when he married her. And five kids.
We were both teenagers when we got married. But I gave her the choice and said, "Look, you can use Windows if you want to, but I'm not going to help you. But if you choose Linux, I'll help you and do whatever you need done." And she chose Linux, and we installed Red Hat 3.0.3 on her machine and got AfterStep running, and was happy as a clam.
See, now that's what I did with my wife, too, and I'm enjoying a happy, successful marriage, some 13 years later. So I really think that is that's the key to having a happy and successful marriage. Don't you agree, Dan?
Well,
yes. Now, I let my kids use OS X, but they want to use the wife's.
They want to use the Linux box, right?
Yes.
Well, there you go. Yeah. See, now that's, there you go.
It makes for a happy family.
Yeah.
I tell people that if I ever have to switch to Windows, I'll just get out of the business altogether.
I think that is an LXer story right there, guys. that, you know what, if you want to keep your family happy and together, the happy and together family uses Linux. That's what it is.
Right, right.
Well, it was interesting.
Just established.
No, it's really true. I have a lovely wife, and we got a book deal. I got a book deal about 3 years ago, and she decided she wanted to help us. And she was the kind of person that if you were going to write a book on how to use Linux, she would be perfect because she didn't know anything about Linux. So she was our test case. So if something we wrote didn't make sense to her, she said, I can't understand this, and we'd rewrite it. And that became the, exploring the JDS Linux desktop, which was a pretty good book. Her son got out of the JDS business for all intents and purposes. But so she's a great Linux user, and she's very happy with it.
Right, Tom, what desktop are you using, Tom?
I use Ubuntu, and she uses SUSE 10.
What is she?
And I use Debian for my main. I have a web server; it's my main web server, and then for my secondary. Slave DNS servers. I use one's Fedora and the other is SUSE 10. But they're all in text mode.
Right.
They run totally in text mode.
So GNOME or KDE?
Huh?
GNOME
oh, on
KDE?
Mine?
Yeah.
GNOME on both of the desktops that we use.
Good man.
I got to put out a plug for Fluxbox.
Yeah.
If anybody listens. Yeah?
I'm using it right now. I love Fluxbox.
You know, once you go, if you like tabs in Firefox, try tabbing Xterm. Moving from GNOME to Fluxbox was as significant of a change as moving from Windows to Linux. That's how much more powerful Fluxbox is over GNOME or KDE or any one of the other, you know, XFCEs or whatever.
And it's several orders of magnitude faster, too.
Yeah, if I couldn't have my, because I'm an old After Step guy, and when After Step was done, I went to Window Maker like everybody else did. And when Window Maker, like, it kind of just, you know, failed out over the last 5 years, I finally pushed the Fluxbox. Now, I'm the guy who's been using the same email program for 10 years. It's called MUT.
There you go.
But, yeah, anybody, I would encourage anybody to give Fluxbox a try. And you can even use the old Window Maker dock apps with Fluxbox. It is an outstanding window manager. And for programming, it's a dream.
So what do you use to program? What do you use? VI? Or are you one of those freaky people that use Emacs?
Definitely VI all the way.
Yeah.
Actually, I should say VI improved.
Yes. VI improved.
I'm using them.
Yeah,
but
VI is mine
too. Yeah.
I use VI also. Well, I actually use VIM. I prefer VIM.
Yeah.
I would love to use Emacs. I'm just not good at it.
Well, Emacs, you have to just hold the control key down the whole time you're doing it. Control C, Control E. Control I don't have time for all that stuff. You know, Shift Z, Z, and then, you know. And plus with VI, you can program games using VI macros. The Towers of Hanoi, that's a famous example. You can actually, with the macros in VI, program it to solve the Towers of Hanoi puzzle. And there's other things that you can do, too. Like, you could solve puzzles and stuff. It's a tremendous piece of software. And it's got to be my top five productivity. In fact, if I can't have VI, again, I would just get out of the technology business altogether without VI. I'm serious. I would just take up farming or something.
That's the way I feel, too.
Yeah.
Hey, Tom,
tool you got
when you said about your book deal, did that book, are you still working on that book?
The book came out in September of 2004, I think.
And what was the name of that book?
It's called Exploring the JDS Linux Desktop by O'Reilly.
Okay.
And right now I'm writing that was co-written between Sam Heiser and I. But right now I'm writing a book for O'Reilly. It's an in-depth Linux systems administration book. It's, you know, high-level systems administration.
No.
We don't even have a chapter or anything on commands or anything like that. If you don't know commands and if you don't know how to use Linux, this book wouldn't be any good to you.
Oh, so you're not going to spend the first two chapters on installing Linux?
No. No.
That's really breaking with tradition there, I'll tell you.
So, yeah, actually, the second chapter just basically tells you how, it doesn't go through how to do it, but it basically tells you, go install Debian in a, you know, with a net install and a with net install and as a mail server in text only mode. I mean, so basically that's how we tell them what to install, and then we tell them then add these things. We're going to switch over to PostFix and a few things like that. So. You're expected to really know Linux already, and it's an O'Reilly book. And originally, we were going to do Essential. It was going to be Essential Linux Administration, like Essential Unix Administration. But we decided not to copy Eileen's book. We just decided to do it straight from scratch. And you would basically, if you were a Power Linux user, this would be the book that you'd want to get if you wanted to figure out how to do virtual domains or set up, a authentication system or a federated identity management, things like that. High-level technical book for Linux people.
Two questions.
There's not one.
No. Two quick questions. One, what do you write in your what program are you using to write the book? And the second one, whatever happened to JDS, is that still plugging away?
Okay, I'm using O'Reilly's templates, and I don't submit it in ODF, but which would be ODT, but I submit it in the OpenOffice format.
Okay.
And then what they do is they move it over to FrameMaker. But they have a template with all the tags in it, and so you basically use that. And I was one of the co-authors on the running Linux 5. We did that in XML. That was strictly, like XML in the... We didn't even have a tool to do it. It was DocBook, but you couldn't use a DocBook reader or anything. So you were just basically coding in XML in their conventions. And so that's what I use. And the first book was written, the Linux book was written, the JDS book was written. I think it was the first one ever done in a complete book that was written for them in OpenOffice. And so that was kind of fun. And now... JDS turned out to be, was originally a project that was between SUSE and Sun. Sun put the desktop on it, but it was SUSE underneath, and it was their SLES-8. And they were they did their first release, and then they did JDS-2, which was an upgrade. And then they had promised an upgrade called JDS-3. And what happened is JDS got ported over to OpenSolaris. As soon as they got it ported open to OpenSolaris, they basically just stopped work on the... They never released the Linux version. And they had all those fails, of JDS over in China. But they decided not to continue with that, and Novell picked up that contract. So essentially, everything they did and they worked on, it's now running on OpenSolaris. It's available if you want to download it for Linux and compile it, but I don't know anybody that would want to do that. It's a really nice desktop, and it's got a lot of great things, but Novell just came out and did it themselves, essentially. I mean, there's not hardly any difference between the Novell Linux desktop JDS. So JDS is just not, there's no Linux JDS anymore.
Okay. You know what? You know what, guys? We have to cut off one of our main mirrors right now. So I just wanted to thank you guys for coming on, and everybody at the Bin Rev Mirror for listening. You guys have been great guests. And bye-bye, Bin Rev. All right.
Thank you very much. It was a real pleasure.
I wasn't kicking you guys off, but one of our main mirrors that we stream to, Binary Revolution Radio. What?
We're not streaming anyways right now.
What do you mean we're not streaming anyway?
Don't know. Everything went down.
We couldn't have. I'm still connected.
Cannot connect to host linuxlink.net.
Yeah, you can't because there's too many. I only have
too many people on stream.
Five connections to the stream. You have to go to another mirror. I just had to announce, you know, thank the BinRev guys. But no, we're not. If you want to stay on for a few more minutes, that's up to you.
Yeah, cool.
But one of the questions I want to ask you guys, since you have your finger on the pulse of the Linux community, is you know, particularly we had mentioned about Linux on the desktop and consumer desktop in the United States. Is that going to be, you know, do you think that's going to be in the foreseeable future, or is that going to be something that happens more overseas?
Well, there's two things I would say. Number one is that the estimates are wrong. There's a much larger number of people using the Linux desktop than anybody knows. And I can tell you that because I use statistical sampling. And I think my sampling is as good as anybody else's. I mean, I was a professional at it for a long time, and so I put the Linux desktop use at over 10%. It's around where I think Firefox, you know, might be considered. I think Firefox is way over 10% overall in the U.S. So I think, it's really understated, and I think there's reasons for that. But I mean, all you have to do is take a look at the downloads. And it doesn't take long for you to figure out that there's a lot more people using Linux than anybody believes. Overseas, I put some places are using as much as 37% in Europe are using Linux. And in Asia, probably around 20-something percent. And in Latin America, it's going to be way up there. Way, way, way up there. We have an editor. He's not officially an editor, but he's writing for us. Who's from South America, and he's telling us things that we just, you know, you never hear from anybody. So it's really remarkable to find out how much Linux is being used. So yeah, it's really going pretty well, and I just. A lot of enterprises are using it, and they're not saying anything. I know of some very large rollouts that have occurred in major U.S. corporations, especially those that do work for the Department of Defense. But you're not going to get any kind of statistics out of Havoc Pennington or anybody. They just can't, they're not permitted to talk.
Cool. Anything else you'd like to add tonight? Before
Dave, what do you think about the use of Linux?
Well, the one thing that I've been frustrated with over the years is that, you know, the majority of people that use computers use them for toys, and that's what Windows is an excellent operating system for. So I think as long as toys is what people are looking for, Linux is not going to be really very adoptable. You know, people buy that little gadget at Best Buy, and they want to come home and plug it in and make it work. And I used to think that one day Linux would be there, but I'm starting to realize that Linux just isn't meant to be a toy operating system, and it never will be. So I think for the majority of, you know, people in the United States on their, you know, little home PCs, we'll probably continue to see things like Windows that are meant for, you know, playing rather than getting real work done. So I don't consider reaching the unwashed masses as to be really a goal of Linux anymore. I used to.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
So what you were just, you know, basically saying right there is you want a gaming system, you're going to get Windows. You want an entertainment system, it'd be more like Windows. When you want to get your work done, it'd be more Linux.
That's exactly right. And those of us who really rely on our computers to get our work done, you know, that's where you see Linux being used a lot. But for people who aren't very serious, you know.
I would say probably Unix had somewhere around 15 to 20% of the workstation, you know, market at one time. And when I go to Unix users group meetings and speak or anything like that, I find that the Linux SIGs make up probably 90% now. And almost all of those guys that were just formerly AX and all kinds of different Unix admins and people that were interested in it are now using Linux. They've just, you know, people haven't, people don't want to spend money on, pardon me, on IRIX or any of those type things that they used to work on, or graphics or anything like that. And nobody's really built any commercial Unix tools for quite a while. So that's what you're getting,
My concern was always that Microsoft would one day control the browser market to such an extent that they could start extending the server side and lock Apache out of the market. And if they could do that, they could lock all the Linux-based browsers out of the market. But with Firefox, I don't see that happening anymore. And so I think if there's one project that's more important than the other, it'd be Firefox. And people who know my history know that, you know, that I have some strong feelings on this one, but if there's one place to send our support is to the Firefox people, because they're the ones who are making it possible that we could even use Linux as a desktop. And, you know, for as long as they have a certain percentage of people out there using them, you know, we'll be able to keep Microsoft from forming a monopoly in this area.
We had Stephen Von Nichols on a few weeks ago, and one of the exciting things he said to us was that he thinks in less than a year now, because we'll take off those couple weeks, that the whole issue with video formats and the problems that Linux has legally playing those formats will not be a problem anymore. You guys think that's true?
Yep. Absolutely.
I don't know. Anybody's ever tried to use the Google Video Player on Linux has quickly found out that any of the DRM-controlled videos don't work, and Google historically won't release their applications for Linux. So, you know, this is the roadblock people constantly hit up against, particularly with games and entertainment, is, you know, Linux just isn't really good for that.
Now,
I don't know, but like I said, the CyberLink release is going to, I think, solve a lot of that. I mean, basically everything you need, all the software you need, is available from CyberLink. It's the same stuff. I mean, you just...
Unless it's DRM'd.
Right.
Yeah, their stuff's DRM'd. I mean, if you buy like a DVD player today, you know, for Windows, I mean, for your box, you're going to get CyberLink Power DVD 4 or 5 bundled with it. And it'll go in and install and essentially... Windows, at least, become the default player. So, I mean, and it also does MP3s and everything else. And that's
well, I've been really happy with multimedia on Linux, though, myself. There's a tool called Kino, K-I-N-O, that you can use an interface with your mini-DV camcorder. And we made a little home video, and, you know, we did the whole thing. We imported it and edited it and added the sound effects and all that stuff and then burned it to a DVD. And we did all that stuff with Linux.
Yep.
So... It is coming along. I mean, that's stuff that you wouldn't even dream of doing that, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. And
I couldn't even get a digital camera to work with Linux for a long time.
Right. And so in those senses, it is really kind of coming around.
So you were talking
I'd love
about
to be proven wrong. I'd love to see you know, 200,000 homes, the 200 million homes in America running Linux. I would love to see that.
I don't think that'll ever happen, but all I'm saying is that the issues are going to go away where they say you can't use it on Linux. I mean, right now, if you want to use it on Linux, it's like prohibition. You know, you basically take your chances and you download Zine or MPlayer or Totem or whatever. And, well, that's what CyberLink has built, has put their codecs and everything into. I think it's MPlayer, but I could be wrong. But I believe it's MPlayer. It could be Zine. I don't remember. I just remember seeing it and looking at it. I found the download for it.
I mean, there's some really sweet applications, and yeah, you can get around all those issues. Well, not legally. I mean, in some regards.
All depends on what country you're in. That's all.
Well, in a foreign country where I was asked to speak at I was a keynote speaker at a open source conference, I was able to see all that stuff. It was really neat. I was surprised at the quality on Ubuntu running on a laptop with a built-in DVD player, how much better it ran. It was a much better picture. I liked it. But I was really surprised at how good the work those guys do. I guess it's in Hungary, right? The Zine guys?
It is.
I think MPlayer is hosted over in Hungary. Is Zine over there also?
I know that Brazil is the place that you can get the codecs. But I don't know. I think they work on it over there. There used to be a thing that said, you know, we will be gone within the year, and now that doesn't show up anymore.
Right.
Zine is in Germany.
Okay.
And video LAN clients in France.
So was it, did you say it was Steve Vaughn Nichols?
Right.
You were saying it was on? Yeah, okay. He's probably if there's anybody that I would say knows their stuff and is probably as good as anybody there is. I mean, he's probably better than anybody. He's the person. I mean, I really respect him from all kinds of points of view. I think he's actually the best Linux journalist there is.
I agree, and plus he has four initials.
Yeah.
Which means that he has to be good.
That's right. How many people have a byline with four initials?
Right. Yeah, he's a good guy. I met him in somewhere in California, one of those trade shows 5 or 6 years ago, and he's a real serious guy, and definitely is. When he says something, he's serious about it. And there was a point where he converted to Linux, and I remember that point. And since then, he's been a real strong advocate in the mainstream news. And you know, there was a point when, I remember in 1997, Wired had this big article about Linux, and it was all about Torvalds, and at Red Hat, we put it up on the corkboard for everybody to see, and it was a huge deal because it was the first time Linux had really been showcased in a mainstream publication, and Stephen Nichols is the one who took it from, being a surprising, pleasurable thing to just common, every week you see something new, and all of their competitors, then follow. I can't remember who he was writing for at the time. I think it was PC Week, but then you got CNET News and .com and ZDNet, and all of those guys started just falling all over themselves. And so I think that he was really, I think that he had a major impact on the mainstream people learning about Linux. So a good advocate for Linux. Definitely.
I think one of the best, yeah. I mean, when we see his stuff come through our queues, I mean, everybody reads it. I mean, it's like before it even gets on our newswire, people are reading it. He did one article right after the Massachusetts thing where they came out and had that hearing, and then Microsoft said they're going to have this open document, their own open document format. And he wrote an article called Liar, Liar, Pants on Fire.
Yeah.
It was really fun. And I submitted it, as soon as I saw it, I submitted it to Dig. And I mean, it was an instant on the front page. Just, you know, lots of reads. I think it was probably slashed out, but I imagine that article alone probably made his year as far as how many hits he got over there at D-Week. But it's just remarkable what that guy comes up with. And he writes sometimes two articles a day on E-Week. I don't know if you know that or not.
Yeah, we pay some attention to that. He's prolific.
Yeah, he's very prolific and very, he knows his stuff. He's got a good feel for it. I mean, you know, a good journalist has got a nose for news, and he's wonderful at that. Oh, so, you know, he's got me. I'm one of his fans.
Yeah, he's a pretty
good
fan.
If he said that, I think he's probably knows things that other people may or may not know.
But guys, we got to actually.
Yep.
Oh, so we got to start closing it up because these guys have to get out of here. I mean, I'd love to stay on all night.
Well, guys, appreciate it. Yeah. Thanks for having us on.
No, thank you guys for coming on. Maybe we could do it again in the future.
Yeah, we got to get you back on here and continue the rest of the conversation. So.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So anytime you guys would like it, we're available. Yeah. So
by the way, you guys are gonna show up at the Linux World Expo coming up in Boston.
Yes, I am.
Well, you should stop by.
I got to talk to Dave about that. Dave, are you coming?
Yeah, after Linux today, it was just so crazy, and every month I was on the road for a week, and after some hard times with my marriage, I made a commitment that I wouldn't be traveling, and my gardening site does take me out of town twice a year, and I just don't know if I could do more than that, so something has to give, and that's the Linux trade shows. I really miss them, but can't do it.
So, well, I'll be there, and... some of our editors will be there. Yeah.
All right, well, we are also going to have a booth there this year, so make sure you stop by and say hello.
I will definitely be there.
And we'll keep in touch with you, and, you know, we'll hopefully make some arrangements that we could actually catch up with you guys at the show.
Yeah.
Or you, Tom.
Yeah, it would be great to have dinner or something, or, you know, meet for a meal. Or
beer!
You know, I get invited to a couple of, media-related dinners, so it's possible we can work something out there, too.
Oh, that's great. I want to thank you guys for coming on, and thank you for the wonderful, you know, job you guys do on LXer. And, you know, thumbs up.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
We just keep, like I said, if someone wants to get their... resume filled up with articles, just come on. We love to have you.
All right, definitely. Thank you guys very much, and you have a good week, and happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for coming on the show, guys.
Okay, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
We'll talk to you later. That was Dave and Tom from
LXer.
Great stuff.
Make sure you go check out their website.
Look for those articles.
Good stuff. Check those articles out. And, make sure you patronize them because they do a really good job over there. And that, my friends and neighbors, is pretty much the conclusion of episode 121.
Dun, dun, dun. And you know what?
Which is a whole lot.
You know what? This is stupid. Because I said we got to get in touch with the mirrors next week so we can relay right to them instead of them trying to connect to us because we've really limited it to account for bandwidth. The mirrors have been fantastic. You know, they're godsends. And I guess we should really do this right, you know. relay to them instead of them trying to cross their fingers
Imagine
and hope
that.
They connect to us. Because people want to hear the pre-show stuff. They want to hear some of the post-show stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know. If we keep this up, BinRev's going to give us like another half an hour.
Pretty soon it's going to Wednesday night. They're just going to mark it out. Wednesday night is tech show night. We'll just play some filler stuff. And when they connect, you know, we'll pick them up. And when they disconnect, we'll put some more filler crap in, right?
Yeah, so thanks to everybody for listening. I'm going to play some music out. Last words, Alan?
No.
Okay.
Alan said, ah.
All right, thanks for listening.
Good night, everybody.
Were you making egg foo young in the kitchen? I was in the dining room having sushi. Sushi.
Oh, oh my God.
Sushi, sushi.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
It's so nasty. Well, gag me with a furball.
The Linux Think Tech Show.
You guys are so weird, we have nothing to compare you to.
How dare you stand there and criticize? Do you think I don't know what's going on around here? Do you want to make your own choices? Or do you want the state to make those choices for you?
Welcome to the Linux Think Tech Show.